Okay, here we go. Part two, Tommy John. The part one was, about 4 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. I hope everybody has had a chance to watch part one, because in there I predicted that this encounter would fill me with dread. And I was correct. Every day for the last 3 to 4 weeks, well, for the first 2 weeks, I cursed his name. I made an executive decision to curse his name only every other day.
Nice.
And I'm gonna tell you why and see what you think about this.
I love it. Okay.
But I must admit, I think it's been about 4 weeks. And by the way, my wife had not watched the interview, unlike what I predicted. Right. She does, however, do the torturous exercises with me, which is also humiliating because she can do all 5 minutes and 2 minutes of each one. And unfortunately, I can't.
That's okay.
But anyway, so we don't have to mention that again, because it just is what it is. So, but what I have to report is the bouncing on the toes.
Yeah.
I can now do that for a full 5 minutes. Without stop.
Nice.
But I would say that this is sort of a question. Yeah. Sometimes I don't actually bounce.
Yeah.
I just kind of stay on my toes.
Yeah.
Because I can go the whole 5 minutes, and I've tried to decide whether I should keep bouncing and then stop, or just the break be just standing on my toes.
Yep.
I decided to stand on my toes.
I love it.
The other ones, the holding the foot up thing.
Yeah.
I can now go about 2 minutes in the beginning without falling or stopping.
Okay.
But then I have to take a break and do like 10 seconds and then 40 seconds. And then I can go to the end there.
Perfect.
And it's getting a little better. And the lunge one, I can now do 2 minutes. Sometimes I put my hands on my thigh.
Okay. Okay.
And then I have had a couple times when I could say I could hardly walk afterwards.
Okay. Okay.
I could walk.
Okay.
I could walk-ish, I would say.
Right, right.
But then after a few minutes, it gets better.
Right.
Now, what I've noticed, for instance, is, and I'm not going to, under any questioning, give you the number of push-ups I can do.
Don't worry about it.
But I can do 10 more than I could a month ago.
Attaboy. Good.
But I'm not going to tell you how many, because that might be embarrassing.
And the number's arbitrary, because if it's intention-based, it's going to change you anyway, and you're good.
Yeah. And the other thing I do, And I'd love your opinion on this, is I have a weighted ball. I think it's 25 pounds.
Yeah.
And I hold it like this. And then I do squats.
I love it.
Right? All the way down and then all the way up.
I love it.
And I can do approximately 8 more of those, depends a little bit, than I could a month ago.
This is huge.
Now, my questions are, you know, so everybody keeps asking, well, what about the upper body? And I don't want to put words in your mouth and say, well, you have to do upper body exercise and we'll come to that. Or, well, you just do these and that helps your upper body because
it's right.
All right. So I don't want to pretend like I know the answer to that, right? So the other one is, having been exposed to super slow.
Yeah.
There's a big point he makes that the getting stronger part comes when you're resting, not because you're doing something.
Sure.
Right. You the reason you do something to make yourself fail is so that you're telling your body you can't do this. And then it says, if this idiot does that again, I better get stronger for the next time.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah. And so that's when I decided to go to every other day.
Okay.
With yours. And I do the push-ups and the bounce, the squatting and a few other things.
Yeah.
On the other days. And I'd love your opinion about that. This business about like resting, or really should you do it? And I have not done it two or three times a day. I will other times in the day, besides I do other things, right? But,
sure.
But I'll bounce for a few minutes, but I don't do it by the clock like I do the 5 minutes and 2 minutes and all that.
No.
So that's my report.
Okay.
And I'm also, I must say, I'll finish with, I'm a little bit dreading hanging.
I want to get into that. I want to get into that too.
So there you go.
Tom, and then, we've got,
anyways,
okay.
I just want to say how much I appreciate you doing this.
Of course.
I've had such wonderful, you know, it's great. You should talk to Tommy again. So,
okay.
There you go.
And I, well, thank you. And I did get a massive response from your listeners. They're a very passionate crowd who are just digging deep. And it's pretty amazing when you see what attracts what. I appreciate this. But there were about 8 different points in there that I want to get to. But first of all, I want to explain this headband. You have the coincidental privilege of doing this show on a Friday. Every Friday, I wear this headband in homage to the Karate Kid, the original Karate Kid movie from 1984. So I just want to explain that. It's in honor of Daniel LaRusso and Mr. Miyagi. That's what I do in my office. So that's where we're going. So I just want to explain. It's not just like this random costume, whatever, but this is what I do on Fridays. Okay. And if you haven't seen the original Karate Kid, get it right now. Get it, watch it like 10 times this weekend. Okay.
So it's not Bruce Lee. That's not Bruce Lee.
No, this, and not that Jaden Smith crap. This is like the original Karate Kid from 1984. Okay.
And that's what it's called, the Karate Kid?
The Karate Kid. Tom, if you have, Tom,
I don't think I've seen it.
This weekend, okay? I want it, and then I just want like a Tom description of your thoughts and feelings.
Got it.
Okay. In an email, if you feel called.
I will. I promise.
All right. So, gosh.
I don't promise this weekend, by the way.
It's all good. Where do we start with this? Okay. Let's go with the calf bouncing for time. What I put on programs, or what I try to drive people or give the people the freedom to discover, is since training is preparing ourselves for varying environments, and we need to exceed what our environment's going to demand emotionally, physically, intellectually, mentally, spiritually. So if we just take a bounce that is, cause to go 5 minutes, you're going to have to like taper and maintain a pulse, an intention that allows for 5 minutes of total time. But sometimes life might call for something a little more. Less time oriented. So what I try to give people the freedom, and this is what I do as well, is maybe the first couple sets of 30 seconds or so are just real light. Now I'm leaving my feet, Tom.
And yeah, I don't do it nearly that much bounce.
Don't worry about it. Then after a while, I might go. So that's just my version of trying to stimulate my body through this mode. That's all. And so here's the thing too. You hit it perfectly where you don't leave the ground. That's outstanding, because there's people that have these massive healing responses of joints, and they might be suffering from all these things. And they're like, I can't leave the ground, TJ. That's okay. You did it right there where you're just like oscillating vertically.
Yeah.
And if you could make it like kind of jarring, because the more jarring, the more we're going to facilitate lymph and get muscles to turn on, especially the abdominals. But so there it is. It doesn't have to be 5 minutes. You could accumulate 5 minutes in like 10 second sets.
Yeah.
Just do 30 sets. Do you know what I mean? Or so it's like, okay, I'm going to do 10 seconds like this. And then I'm going to do 2.5 like this. And then I'm going to do 3 like this. And then I'm going to, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So, in other words, the person who can do 5 minutes on their toes, they start bouncing.
Can start going a little more aggressive next time. Or
yeah, instead of just smirking like how much, you know.
Yeah. And like, literally, I was at a gas station the other night because I found that as an ideal time to be able to do this. Well, it was 10:30 at night. I'm not getting aggressive because I want to go to sleep.
Yeah.
So I was just literally for a full tank of gas, it was about 217, just maybe 60% of my intention. Got so it. You just have to understand, like, what are you trying to get out of it? Why are we doing it? And then that'll drive you creating the stimulus, you creating the weight per se.
Got
Okay. You said something very interesting too. What about the upper body? Now, just with what we covered last time, technically, if you go with as much intention and you literally put in as much of your system's energy as thoughts, emotions into every second of those moves, the whole body will adapt. Meaning, as long as you kind of know what a push-up is, you'll represent your version of that physical aspect, that movement there. Now, do I do upper body stuff? Of course I do. I was just saying you could pick any move you want, do it with enough intention, and the whole system's going to shift, because then we don't look at like, what's the infinite number of exercises that I need to do because there's so many out there. Don't worry about it. Just get four and just own them. And so here, let's go into that.
So in other words, that business of you have to change every 3 days.
No. No. Dude, the muscle confusion, I think it was called. Yeah. It was like, you know, muscle confusion and transitioning. Now, here's what I think. Where that came was because of the boredom from the human. Well, if you're bored, I'm sorry. I don't think you ever get bored gardening. Or you don't ever get bored cooking, you know. So I don't ever get bored doing movement. How are you bored? Because we've lost sight of why we're doing it.
Yeah.
And so that whole thing of trying to mix up things, you're mixing it up by bringing a different person into the stimulus, because you're a completely different person who's totally in this stage of life. And so that's another variable to just kind of put at peace. Where am I doing everything I can? Are you putting everything you can into the choices? That's the kind of thought there. So here's just a general, if we're going to go upper body, because that's a big question for people. Two moves that I want people to own, and we did them as children. And again, infants and cats are my two biggest mentors.
Yeah.
So infants, if you think about this, the greatest challenge to the shoulders to learn to stabilize the whole, because the scapula is just like laying on the skeleton. It's just like, it's just laying.
Yeah.
So if we want to get that engaged and rooted to an engine, a tree, with the external being the hand, well, what's the easiest way to sync up all that? And the shoulder is now linked to the rib cage, that's linked to the spine, it's linked to the hips, it's linked to the legs, to the feet. Crawling or planking, and planking from hands, Tom. Everybody goes planking from elbows, and they came out with a study that shows it activates your abs. Well, I can activate my abs right now harder than any plank just by thought. So the whole concept of like elbows, we have people planking on elbows, but they don't have any idea how to use their hands. And they did this because people were coming into these classes and couldn't support themselves on their hands, their body weight, because it's hard. Just like we have a hard time supporting our body weight standing on one leg.
Yeah.
So instead of getting these people to learn and acclimate and habituate and actually train, because we were going to lose their business, or the sports, the exercise class, we're going to lose the business. So let's go plank from the elbows. And now everybody can do it. And it's like, but at what point do you get up to your hands? So now here's the thing, because when your hands are engaged on the ground, your whole body completely shifts. That's why there's all those studies. Not that I'm a big study guy, but grip strength with a bunch of mortality stuff, right? Like it's a major thing, just like feet. So planking in varying positions or crawl, but your knees are off the ground. Now, if we're going to keep it real simple, and give people the environmental freedom to explore this stimulus position with a maximum intention greater than anything they've experienced in life, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, like to push themselves beyond the brink safely without needing you or I in their homes, I say hold. So we hold plank positions, 5 minutes. Hold a crawl position, 5 minutes. Same thing with you standing on one leg. The body's going to go ahead, and as it starts to fail, it's going to bring in these dormant areas and try to figure out how to survive that environment right there. And safely, the worst thing that happens to you, you just fall down. And I want to say something real quick, because everyone's just like, well, I have a torn labrum in my shoulder. I have a frozen shoulder. I have an arthritic. I have not seen anybody with any acute or chronic case that couldn't hold a crawl position. I mean, horrible torn labrums. Fresh dislocations like 2 days ago were put right back in. Them coming in, they could still do it. They might only be able to do it for 2 or 3 seconds, but they could still do it without pain and then accumulate that. And then 2, 3, 4 weeks later, they're able to keep going in the face of whatever the torn tissue is. So that's one. If somebody's just going to go explore a move.
Can you show us that? Looks like?
So here's a version of, well, I'm going to go on the ground. Here we go. You're in my office, by the way. All right. So knees below the hips, hands below the shoulders. Bring the knees off the ground. That's it. That's it. And literally what will happen is your body's going to start to do all these shifts, but we've chosen a position to start in. So that's how we spell our name, so to speak. Like we've chosen to spell our name like this. If the body goes to bring it out and change all, well, now you're spelling your name wrong. So we got to have just like some parameter in the very beginning, because just like when you were doing the lunge, and I want to talk about it, you put your hands on your legs. Well, now you're spelling your name T-O-M-H.
Yeah.
Okay. So here's another option. Crawl is the safest. Well, not safest. It's the simplest. Okay. Yeah. And then planking is the next one. And it's not, we don't have to get like, what am I doing with my stomach and my butt, my tilt pelvic, and just go, just explore it and go. And you'll see there's this one here. That's just real basic. Now there's 5 different directions that I'll do in my office. And then a handstand against a door, and we'll go 5 minutes each, or we'll do sets of varying intensities on those. But those are a good one to like start to own. And this is what I say.
And you mean when start to own, you could start with the just the knees up off the ground.
And just that's everything.
Not the one hand.
No. You could try to explore that, but I'm just saying, just simple. And everything I've stated right now is just first grade stuff. If you want to think about it, like before we go on to these other things, we have to own. That's why we did it when we first started life. That's why we did all these things early on, so that we could then move to more advanced methods. So, or advanced experiences of life. So think of this. The other one, I always tell people, feet to hips, hands to shoulders, spine. If you literally keep those areas as strong as possible, feet to hips, hands to shoulders, spine in between, you can do anything you want from a physical competency standpoint, which is also expressing emotion and interacting with the world at the fullest capacity that you desire to do. Yeah. So planking and crawling, that's the easiest way to get bulletproof shoulders as they relate to the hands, wrists, and forearms. Because again, I want to touch on something. Anybody out there, including UT and wife, check with your wife as well. When we stand on one leg, it's one thing to be able to do it for a period of time. Like that's what, like a strength endurance of an amount of time. Good, 5 minutes, or good, 3 minutes. Looks good. Then I ask questions about the leg they're standing on. Now this is getting more, it was just something I was observing over literally this decades of time watching this. We don't really need to know it, but it's just kind of a nice little thing to look at, okay? Because it'll just figure itself out over time. But watch this. When we're standing on one leg, the leg you're standing on is really the leg that's being tested and trained. It's the base leg.
Yeah.
And so I'll look at that and I'll ask them questions What were you feeling on the leg you were standing on?
Pain.
And so, well, here's the thing, but pain, but pain where, right? Because it's an alarm.
In the back.
If it's the foot, ankle, or calf, anything below the knee, that's a big red flag. And now, okay, it's not to scare everybody or whatever, but I equated, I did videos on this. What it should be is the hip. The hip,
yeah, that's too.
Okay, so here's the thing. It should only be the hip and the butt and like a little bit of the hip flexor just on fire, because that should be what fatigues the most and first. If the foot, ankle, or calf or anything below the knee fatigues or burns or is failing, even the arch of the foot, anything, that's like the tires balding before the engine.
Got it.
And so here's what the brain does. The brain will go into the engine and will downshift the engine to a golf cart engine because your tires are like moped tires. And then everybody, Tom's going to go into it and be like, oh, tight hip flexors, weak glutes, amnesia glutes, all this stuff. No, the brain's so smart. It will downshift because it knows if that engine stayed up, primed and calibrated, woo, it would rip the feet, the tires apart. And yeah, so it literally knows this. So that's another little thing with you standing on one leg. We're hitting the feet, ankles, and calves in one shot. The test is the training, and the training is the test, as it usually is in pure forms. With planking, these are your feet. These are your ankles. These are your calves. It's very similar. We have a blade. We have a blade. We have a delt. We have a glute. We have rotators. You know, we have a hamstring and a bicep. There are so many parallels to upper and lower. It's pretty amazing. So when we do this, I'm very serious with, we should be able to learn to be able to stand on one leg and split our stride. We should also own crawling or being able to brace our body weight from our hands. I can't stress that enough. You do not want your hands, wrists, and forearms to get weak.
Yeah.
You do not want that to happen.
No elbow thing.
Wait, what?
No doing it laying on your elbows.
Just not on your elbows, because it's like, it'd be like doing the straight leg raise from your knees.
Yeah.
And then wondering why you can't walk, you know, it's like, well, what the hell? You've been on your knees this whole time.
Yeah.
Okay. Now let's go to, I want to address the soreness, because this is cool. I took this from I don't know who said it initially, but the music is between the notes. Like when we pluck a string and then it reverberates, it's the in-between time where the music is.
Yeah.
So when people are coming into my office, I am dead honest with them and saying, look, listen, what we're doing in here is controlled damage. It's controlled demolition. We are purposely putting you in a very dangerous position, safely, a controlled dangerous position. So your brain goes, you know, wow, we're going to keep coming to this environment. We got to survive. I need to hormonally get in check. I need to create connective tissue. I need to digest. I need to crave foods. I need to crave the light. I need to crave sleep. Like all these things are going to sync up. And then the next time, assuming that the music between the notes, the time between the notes, the elements between the notes were ideal, because we can only do what we can recover from. So here's the thing. And this goes with, how do I know I'm not doing too much of this? Tom, here's what's so perfect about this stuff, because I was a big one as well. As a former pro athlete and a double degreed master's and bachelor's from university system, I thought I knew, and you take one day on, two off, or you don't pitch every day and you do. And I was like, this was the hardest swallow for me. This was the hardest thing. I'm like, how can we do this as much as I've read it can be done, like over and over and over all the time? Well, with this stuff, it's like a baby will never overdo crawling. Why? Like, I don't know. I can't ask a baby. I'm just like making a guess. But they'll crawl and like do something, and then they'll just like stop and like look at you and then go. It's like they're creating their own sets. So they won't overdo something, but they're always having this drive to get to this end point, which is probably walking, if we're just going to be simple. Okay. Yeah. Being upright and walking so they can explore and get out. So when you do a leg raise, a lunge, a crawl, or a plank, and we'll get to hanging, I want to touch upon hanging. You can't overdo it, T, or anybody out there, because you will literally, no matter what you've got going on, I'm going through a divorce, I didn't sleep last night, I'm on new medications. I'm doing all this stuff. I'm drinking root beer in bed. Like all these things. Okay. You will literally just, you'll just fail. The body will just, it'll just stop. Yeah. Just like with a baby, it wants to keep going. It's like, oh, and it like, will just stop. It just creates these perfect sets. That's how I can give people in-home programs with the freedom to push themselves harder emotionally, mentally, physically than anything they've ever experienced. And I can rest my head knowing they're safe because they can't, they would just fall. Just like right. with the lunge, you'll just fall.
Right. I you know, I can see now that I'm the proud, I guess it's the wrong word, but owner of two kittens. And I've nice. Watched them for 6 months.
Yeah.
It's amazing. They have exactly that. They know when to move and they move amazingly well. And then they just sit there.
Stop. They'll just stop. And they, so what I'm trying to do is like get people in. I have a little saying in my office. People will ask me how many sets, because I'll suggest a slew of exercises or movements or stimulus or whatever. Okay, TJ, how many sets? Till disinterested. I put it back on them, Tom.
Yeah.
And at first they're like, what? And they laugh. And I'm like, no, like, how the hell do I know?
Yeah.
I don't have any idea. And I'm not about to claim to know. And then some are like, well, if that's the case, then I just wouldn't do any. And I'm like, but you drove here and you employed me, you know, so you're here for a reason. So based on your intention and your why, how many sets are appropriate to change you? Some people it's 25. Same person a week later might be 3. I'm not to judge it. I can't judge it. And so here's the thing too. Here's what I love too. When we go sets till disinterested and it's like, well, how about like getting like an edge for those really challenging times in life? I'm down with it. Okay. So sets till disinterested, if we're doing something right, but then go like 2 or 3 more, just so in the face of being really uncomfortable and being in that position that you don't want to do it. You're like, dude, I don't want to do this. Stay in that environment and see who you are for another 2 or 3 sets. It's okay. You're not going to want, it's going to be like, cause you will hit a point where you're like, God, I don't feel like doing this right now. You will literally come to those terms, do 2 or 3 more right there, 2 or 3 more sets of whatever. I'm good. And don't judge yourself.
I think there's 2 things that are implicit in what you're saying. One is because you can get disinterested if you're not pushing yourself hard enough. So, okay, I'm doing 5 minutes and I'm just going to do sit. And then it's you're disinterested, but nothing has happened because you haven't really pushed yourself enough. So you just taken time because somebody said to do 5 minutes.
Exactly. Checking
the other thing is, this is very different than if I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but if you were doing weights, you wouldn't do this. You because you could hurt yourself then.
Well, so here's what I do for those people. Before we load these, that's a great question. Before we load those positions, they have to show ownership of body. Like they have to demonstrate massive competency on all these things. And then we load. And we'll load and we'll load and we'll load heavy. And it's more on the days where we're externally loading that I will say that, because I really want that person to determine what's safe for them. So watch, because I pick holds, loading holds, 5 to 10 seconds.
Wait, you do what? What's that?
So the holds, like the holding of the position. Yeah, so you could load your lunge, T.
Yeah.
You could load your lunge with that 25-pound ball. Your times will be less, maybe do 10, 15 seconds. You know what the picture should be or how to spell your name because you've done so many holds that you kind of know what the parameters are. So you go into that position, you load to a load that's great enough for you to own that position. If you break the position, you're spelling your name wrong and we're out.
Yeah.
So it's like with becoming aware of position, now we're going to externally load. And there's some people that will get so heavy that all of a sudden they can't hurt themselves per se because they have the parameters in place and the weight will just fall. That's it. But it's like with reps and with all these things, if the goal is to move a weight 10 times, That's like me telling you, like we said last time, go into the field and write any name you want on the bench. And then know what your name is at the end of when you're done. It's like, I don't even know. So we need just some framework of how to spell our name correctly. That's why I love the holding of positions. And to give people the freedom to what their intention is driving, what their why is. Are you stimulating enough to get that feedback? Are you eating the foods to get the feedback for the desire you want? I mean, it's a similar in anything. Are you sleeping with, you know, these things in mind? Like it's no different with movement. Here's another thing. Recovery is movement. At no time is the baby like, I'm taking today off from learning how to walk. Right. You know, it might have a sluggish day or it might have a real, but it's always going to find something. Again, that's why I love the recovery days. So we used to train a bunch of NFL guys in Chicago. My brother-in-law was on the Bears for 16 years. And so we get all those guys coming in on Mondays. Now, Mondays, they just came from war Sunday night.
Yeah.
So their day would be 5 to 7 minute holds, everything. Like all, we had like 7 or 9 moves that we would do. And it was 5 to 7 minutes. So it'd take, you know, a good 3 or 4 hours. And it wasn't pleasant, but it was perfectly adaptive. Like it was perfectly safe for them to go into an environment and stimulate themselves to forget the trauma from yesterday, which was the NFL game.
Yeah.
Or the NHL game or whatever. Now, I'm just speaking pro athlete, but it's no different than us involving ourselves in our world and participating in our world. Now, Tuesday, they felt fantastic and we could train again. Got Wednesday, it. And the whole league's off on Tuesday. So now they're training again Wednesday, training again Thursday, training again Friday. Everybody else took Monday off, bunch of drugs, bunch of ice, bunch of passive treatments, took Tuesday off, bunch of passive treatments, drugs and ice. Little bit of this, that, maybe some treadmill bullshit, like all this stuff on Wednesday, some stretching form, like all this stuff. Thursday, little. Friday, let's get after it. Saturday off, Sunday game.
Yeah.
You can't possibly thrive. Now, the NFL is toxic as hell. But what our athletes come week 16 is they'd be more functional in the face of all that damage.
Yeah.
Since everybody's damaged. So I'm not saying that that's what we're doing. And like, that's what we want to do in life. But right, that concept was very hard for me to understand where it was like, wait, I feel like absolute shit. My body feels like a piece of leather that was dragged behind a car for 20 miles. I'm like pain. I'm like, and my ears hurt. Like what the fuck? Tom, one time I thought my calves were infected. They hurt so badly. I literally was looking at them like, oh my God. I was like, I thought I had an infection. And I was like, I can't believe what's going on. And then I went into the theories behind, well, I've always rested it or stretched it or took a break. I'm like, let me just see if I go in into the environment, like we're talking, and I pushed myself into this safe environment because I can't overdo it. I'm going to do the holds, let's just say. What would happen? And what I found was it was like almost instantaneous relief later in the day relief. Plus next day, it was like recovery was.
Yeah. So what about just because I've heard this, I've heard people say you don't want to hold things because that makes your muscles tight.
Yeah. So I've heard they tried to tell me that in chiropractic school and everybody looked at me when this was like said on the PowerPoint. Everyone's like, like looking at me because I was like 12 years older than everybody there. And I'd already run a business based on these things they're saying are wrong. Well, they say isometrics create trigger points. And it's like, huh? Well, first of all, we got to think of like, what is a true isometric? It's me pushing into an immovable object as hard as I can.
Yeah.
So that's true because it's not changing lengths. Like what you're doing with the lunge or what I'm doing with the lunge or what people are doing, we're just taking 5 minutes to move 3 inches.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So I guess it's not. So now here's the thing. A tight muscle is caused by what? The brain. Why would the brain tighten a muscle? To protect the system. Okay. I'll buy that. So I don't want to look at tight muscle as being something that's this awful thing. Just like I don't want to look at a fever as being this awful thing. Like, interesting. It's tightening a muscle. I'm going to go into that area because the brain thinks that area is open to being susceptible to whatever we've got going on. And it could be a training environment.
Yeah.
Right. That could be the response. So I want to go back in and feed it this input that says we're good.
Yeah.
Plus, I want to go through the greatest range of motion. I just did a post yesterday. I haven't stretched in 20 years. And everyone's like, what? Like, how am I all of a sudden like not this decrepit mess? I move through the greatest range of motion thousands of times, or holding for 5 minutes to an hour through the greatest range. So that, here's the thing with, I want to strengthen and assure my mind through every inch that I can move, that I can absorb force in those lengths.
Yeah.
If I only have taught it where I strengthen this much, but I stretch this much, when the brain gets into life and the body expends itself to a length that's this, and the feedback comes to the brain and goes, we can't absorb force like this. We have not trained. We've stretched. All of a sudden the brain goes, whoop, and it'll throw you locked down. And that's what we see with a lot of people who will stretch all the time. All of a sudden they go to stride 2 inches longer than they ever have, or to bend over 2 inches, and it will go into lockdown. Again, a protective healing response, a beautiful, beautiful healing response.
Got it. All right. So yeah, let's take us through this next step here.
All right. So then, wait. So that is literally it. So what I'm urging people to do, including you, Tom, and this sucks, okay, is that try. And it's literally the best thing is just don't take my word for it. Just try. Like try and literally see. You'll go in, you'll be like, God, my hips, my calves, my back, they are, damn it. All right. I'm going to try this out. And you go ahead and you get back into the position that was once traumatizing yesterday. Don't worry about your times. Do the best you can. Position is what you're worried about. Holding the position. That's
don't put your hands on your hip ever.
So listen, that's going to, I'm going to apply that to the hang, because the body will always try to find a way to save itself and to bring it comfort or relief. And so for every time we choose that, you're taking demand from somewhere else. Now, typically when the hands go on the leg, that means your back, like the part holding you up, it doesn't like holding you up. Like it's getting torched. So now the second you throw your hands on, the demand for the back is now gone. It's like an orthotic. You threw an orthotic into a lunge. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, so it's fine just as you're playing with this. Do you know what I mean? You're like, oh, because you'll fight. The brain is so awesome. It's going to do all these things to try to save you in that traumatic environment. So if you can, in the face of that, choose no, that's like not choosing food during a fast. And now let's get into hanging. So I think it's an hour and a half podcast on why everybody should hang 5 to 7 minutes a day. And it's not physical, T. Like it's all emotional and mental reasons. Here's in my 20 years of experiencing this.
I can imagine.
Okay. So here it is. So again, training is controlled damage. It's an environment that we have to kind of control in a hostile way. And if I can stimulate life or death to the best of my ability safely, that's the weird thing. I'm putting it in a death situation safely. Like what is that?
Yeah.
So I've found like ways, and this is what I'm talking about. These are simple ways. Just hold these positions. Dude, Shaolin monks were holding these positions. Pure yoga is like 20 to 60 minutes. This stuff's been done forever. Yeah. So the thing of it is, let's take the lunge. You can, when the front heel's off, you can drop the heel down. You could pop your hips up degrees. You could bring your knee back towards you. You could put your chest forward. You could put your hands on your legs. You could turn the outer foot. You could shift and contort to buy relief in so many different ways.
Yeah.
In all these even the plank or the crawl or the straight leg raise, you can bend that front knee. You can point and flex the front toe. You can lean back. You could do all, you can bring your hands. You'll see like all this stuff with hands. It's all these ways of bringing relief and comfort. Okay. There's only one exercise.
I got it.
You can't do that. Okay. Now watch, Tom. So, cause I was looking, I'm like, why is this so, it's not physically hard. Like it's not the physical, because I could overcome physical, like lunge. Let's go. I can I can adapt to going longer. Why is it that? Why is that so hard mentally? When you're hanging, the infinite amount of sensory senses are reporting status to the brain. It's infinite. And it's like, yo, we're dying. And the brain goes, okay. The brain goes, shift. And then the body goes and tries. And it's like, we can't. And then the brain goes, shit. And then like all haywire, like everything goes to shit. So here's the thing. The only compensatory action it can do is breath. It can change breath.
Or fall.
So Tom, if we're hanging and I'm in like a parasympathetic, meditative, I'm keeping my shit together. I'm visualizing what's going on. And then all of a sudden, like you, it starts to go sympathetic and you'll buy relief. You will buy relief for a very short period of time. So here's what I say on this. This is what's so cool about that move. It's just the reasons I fast. So I do dry fast. I do absolute dry fast. No water, no food, 3 days, and no water touches my skin. So it's just atmospheric grounding and that's it. So the reason I do it isn't for detoxifying, isn't for immune, isn't for, because we could say that about anything. I'm just like, the reason I do it is because I mentally, emotionally want to put myself into a position where I'm going through a change, a desire, a craving of sorts, a physiologic, and it's appropriate, where I'm desiring food, nourishment from what I believe to be food, what I've programmed myself to think is food. And so I can sit and stare at those options, those bailouts, those compensations, those save, and I can go in the face of absolute hunger and go, no. And I can literally make, now that right there just completely empowered the system. Everything just shifted for me in that moment right there. That's why I fast. So now in this.
So how often do you do that?
At the changing of the seasons. Four times a year.
Got it.
I did distilled water fast. And it just didn't make sense to drink that much, just plain unstructured water. You know, it just didn't feel right to me. Yeah. So then I started doing dry and then I was like, God, I feel so much better not. And then I have this little scale. I just want to share this little Tanita bioelectrical impedance. It measures body fat with weight. And then it also can, based on the speed of it, get a gauge on your hydration, sort of. Obviously, there's room for error, for sure. Yeah. But if I'm just using that device, I go with it. After a dry fast tea, my hydration numbers are higher.
Wow.
It's pretty interesting. But I'm not like sitting in a cold room watching movies all day. Like I'm outside on the earth, on the grass, on the, you know. So I'm getting it through breath. I'm getting it through my skin and the atmosphere. So anyway.
Got it.
So what I say is when we hang, I posted this not too long ago. We have the ability to hang our body weight seconds after being born. We know the grasp reflex, right? And now some are theorizing like Sally Goddard Blythe. She's theorizing like it's to climb survival to nurse. So everything we're kind of born with, the primitive reflexes are to keep us here, right? Like in the first 2 years of life. So it's like, why the ability to hang? Maybe to nurse, maybe to just claw into mom and hold on. So I was like, God, you can hang a baby will hold its body weight. So I started to look, that seems like a very innate action that we should be able to own, you know, that we should own for a long time. Okay. Then I started to observe injuries where people would come in and some correlations, nothing's exact, nothing's one-to-one, but it's just, I started to make it and I was like, what's a minimum hanging, you know, from a standpoint of just general, not pro athlete, not any of this shit. 90 seconds minimum is a good place to be. Okay. So and there's people that are reaching out. They're like, I started at 10 seconds and now I'm at 2 minutes. And that was like 2.5 weeks. I'm like, this is so great. So working on your ability to hang, this is why I say 5 to 7 minutes a day. It's just throughout your 16 hours of the day. If there's a bar and you see it or a tree branch, just go hang. go and focus on only your breath. Try to keep your breath parasympathetic. What that means, just exhale slower than you inhale. Done.
And done. Just a technical note. Some people would say only breathe through your nose. You're saying breathe through your nose and breathe, exhale through your mouth.
Well, I'll do both. I explore with both. I like the nose only. Just like I think I said, I don't know if I said, these old school Russian track coaches used to have their athletes keep water in their mouths all practice to force them to only nasal breathe. So literally whatever's harder. I want to share a testimony on that one. But 5 to 7 minutes accumulated throughout the day, that's a good place to be. With sometimes when you test yourself, we should be able to go 90 seconds minimum. That's a really good place to be. So just right there. Now, here's the thing.
90 seconds continuous.
Continuous. Yeah. That's a minimum. And then some people are like, man, I like my shoulders hurt or I don't have the strength to hold it at all. So here's what you can do. It's really just getting your arms above your head. That's where the magic is. Because they were noticing in people, when we're born or we're on the earlier end of our span, the little hook coming off the scapula and then the ledge here off the acromion, like all those things, there's real wide spaces. And then over time, that hook starts to form down and the bone starts to curve down. Well, yeah, the electric effect into the direction of stimulus, right? So if we can go up, all of a sudden you open up those areas and you start making room for all those ligaments and those cuffs, the musculature. So for people who are like, it's bad on your shoulders. It's actually very good for your shoulders, but you need a minimum base of strength to be able to do it. So we're working up with this. We're doing the planking, we're doing the crawling, we're doing the straight leg raise, we're doing the lunge, and now we're doing the scap. You can put your feet down and hang. And this is like, I mean, like far, far gone. You can't hold it all. Okay, so this is for that population. It's like, shit, or I have RA. I'm trying to heal RA and my hands are just, it's okay. Don't worry about it. Or frozen shoulder, whatever the thing is, arms up and you're going to support your body weight into your legs at certain percentages. Does that make sense?
Flesh that out a little bit.
So I'm like holding and my feet are on the ground, T, and I'm just like supporting into my feet are on the ground. So there's just like tension up, but it's not full body weight into my hands, if that makes sense. And then you'll notice when you total up. So I got this little lady, she comes in on Tuesdays and she doesn't have the strength to hold her. And part of it, she doesn't want to either. I'm like, okay, I can't, you know, shoot the horse in the face with water, but here we go. She'll go 7 minutes supported on her legs. And that's where we're at. And it's fantastic because she still gets some benefit from it. Yeah. And it's a way that we can progress to being able to work up to being able to do 90 seconds minimum in our journey of 5 to 7 minutes. So now here's the thing, T. Before I moved to California was 2015. My longest hang was 2:36, I believe. 2 minutes and 36 seconds. And I'm a pretty competitive person with myself and I like exploring these really scary things. And so I was like, but that just held. And I would revisit it. And it just held, Then all of a sudden a day in here in my office, I got 2:46. So it was like a 14 or 15 year record of mine that was triumphed with by 10 seconds. And I'm like, shit. And then that held for like 3 years. Then all of a sudden, I'm like, you know what? What I started to notice were these 3 minute benchmarks. If you got to the 3 minute club, that was a big deal. Like that 3 minutes we just weren't seeing it. You know what I mean? And Tom, it's not like the 4 minute mile, we're putting imposed limitations on people. Like, oh, you're never going to get, but good luck. You know, it was just go. You've got 10 minutes of hang here. You got 5 minutes of hang. Go as long as you can. So 3 minutes started to come out of people as being pretty impressive. So it was a 3 minute club. Then there were people in my office that were 4 minutes and then 4.5. And I'm like, shit, what is, you know what? So I was just pissed off that I was being left behind. So I'm like, one time before a live, I forget who I was going on with, but I was looking at the bar and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go into that environment And I am going to absolutely, in a savage manner, focus on my breath and control to the best of my ability to breathe. Keep my breath calm is what I should say. Just like I'm going to control my hunger in the face of fasting. Okay. So I go in. And now my thought was to breathe as deep as I could, as slow as I could, hold as long as I could, exhale as slow as I could, slower than the inhale. And then after full exhalation, hold as long as I could. That's one. So if I just started to count breaths like that, all of a sudden, T, I was like 9 breaths in. And then all of a sudden, I started to lose it. And then I refocused. And then it just became this fight. And then all of a sudden, and it was 3:04. So I broke the 3-minute mark. Just, I wasn't extra training. I wasn't doing anything. I'm like, holy shit. And I even went on the IG live and the guy didn't know what I was talking about. I'm like, I just broke a personal record. I got 3:04. Now, once that happened, I was able to get 3 minutes every day. And so I was like, okay.
Did you have to do the same breathing every time after
every
that?
Time. Now, yeah. What would be interesting is if I, in the face of not breathing like that, I could still maybe habituate. Do you know what I mean? That'd be a cool test, right?
Right.
But I kind of like channel out and sort of close out. What could be kind of cool is you stare at a clock so you know what the time is. So psychologically, or count your seconds. I mean, there's just some mental stimulating things that would make it just really tough. But here's what I got. I was like, all right, let's just see how long I can go. I didn't want to keep going for long time. So I brought in an outside stimulus weight around a belt, this little chain belt. And I was like, let me just see how heavy I can master, weight at 3 minutes. So I added a 2.5-pound little plate, went into it, got 3 minutes. Next day. And this is every day, T. Next day, 5-pound plate, my breathing, got it. Next day, 7.5, got 2:01. Okay, this is where I'm at. So I stayed with this. Now I was totally dispirited and I'm like, damn, man. Well, then I go in the next day and got 3:23, 7.5 pounds.
Wow.
This is why I'm saying it's not a physical. I didn't physically get stronger in that 24 hours. You know what I mean? So it's like, what is there that I'm not seeing? And I don't think I'll ever know. I just know it's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing.
Okay. I'm sure you know Wim Hof. This sounds
familiar.
Right. It's familiar. Right.
That's where. And that's the thing, sitting in a cold environment, if we can focus and channel and really go center, it doesn't matter what the environment. Now, think about that, though, Tom, like if I in the face of that, and that's what this training is so great. I'm just raising my level of stimulus adaptation. So, like I said, if through this method or all these other, I can bump it up to here where normally this is a traffic jam. Yeah. And that would have broke me, right? Or this is like a divorce interpretation, or this is a, like, you just, so then in the face of these things out there, you can make these decisions calmly and see what's best for you or not.
Yeah. You know. No, it's to summarize it, it's the stronger, and we mean every way you are, the harder you are to kill.
To kill. it literally is that. I've had people, I think I said it last, one of my buddies had trained a person, she had spinal meningitis and it was aggressive and they drew, you know, spinal fluid and the bacteria and the infection. I mean, it was bad news. She was 76, I believe, or 74. She survived the innovations and everything. Okay. They went, the doctor literally told her husband, had she not been as strong as she was, she doesn't survive that.
Yeah.
And that's where I say, it's not like the doctor says, oh, had she not been so cardiovascularly fit? Like, what are you talking? It's just, it's all of it. Had she been so flexible? Has she not been so flexible? Like, what?
Yeah.
No, had she not been so, and she was training along these lines too. And she was, so it's just an infection, some procedure, a life event. Matter. Do you know what I mean?
No. Yeah, I know exactly. So we only have a couple of minutes. So just, is there any kind of bar? Like, what do you?
Oh. So,
Like we need a bar. We need like
a door jam bar are the least expensive ones. You can build something.
Yeah.
Like monkey bars are a great thing. Again. However, there's people doing tree branches.
Yeah.
And the variability of the tree branch is kind of cool
because
it's not, you know, uniform. And it just brings in a variable that you get to stimulate.
Any bar that you can stick in your door or anything.
Stick in the door. And I say vary grips because, again, I've learned a lot from these kids. So if you watch kids and they're just like, so this might be your grip. 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 You can vary it.
Yeah. Does the grip
vary that? And again, we're going, you know, there's 4,000 or 5,000 nerve endings in the feet. So we want bare feet, you know, like as much as we can. Same thing with the hands, because everyone's going to go, I could hold it, TJ, if it wasn't for my hands. And I could say, yeah, I could dunk a basketball if it wasn't for my legs.
Right.
So like, we got to like, the hands are just as important as the feet, and they are muscle. There's layers. And so everybody gets this idea that if I get gloves, it's going to be better, but we don't want to put earmuffs at you know, when we're trying to really listen for, you know, some details. So,
all right, part two, we got.
I love it. Till next time. Tom, you have an assignment this weekend, don't you?
Yes. Yes. The Karate Kid.
Maybe this weekend. Maybe it's 1984. And if I could share the best 2 years, I'm a cinephile, and the greatest 2 years of film, 1984, 1985. I urge everyone to go check out those 2 years and watch all the titles from those 2 years, and your life is set. There we go.
All right.
All right, Thomas.
Next time. Thanks.
Got it, bye. Bro. See you, man. Thanks.